Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to dive into some college football talk now. And to help us do that, we bring in Andy Staples from The Athletic. Andy, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
How's it going?
It's going very well. And I saw last night on Twitter you were fighting the good fight. People are very upset that Alabama and LSU have open dates before they play each other, as if they don't have open dates every year.
Stupid people were very upset, but most people who actually pay attention knew that that happens all the time.
Yes. Yeah, I always appreciate people. Like Rexrode does this too. You two fight the good fight on Twitter. I don't have the patience for it, so good on the two of you. I appreciate it.
Andy's a big quote tweeter when he fights people.
Good. You are too.
Yeah, but
well, yeah, expose it to the masses. Let the people decide how they feel about what the person said. And I usually feel like pretty good at selecting those.
Yes. No, you bring out some real gems, no doubt. I think the name, image, likeness, like when we get into those, I feel like you really find some real treats in the name, image, likeness argument.
Well, the beauty of those, Joe, is my opinion on that hasn't changed in 12 years.
Yeah.
I've been telling you this was going to happen since, I think I wrote a column in 2011 saying this is what they'll eventually do. Guess what? That's what they're eventually doing. And so I get these people who want to argue with me, and they think they're the first person who ever had this thought. But I've been argued with by these people for over a decade now. So I've heard every argument. And unfortunately for them, it's not their fault. I've already come up with counter-argument 50 times. So I have a little more practice.
Yeah, I do have to get – I mean, Andy, is that the first – that's the first time I had heard that – really suggested and laid out was in that column that Andy wrote many, many years ago. So credit to you on that one. Of course, now I think most people are on the same page on that.
Most of us.
And we're somewhat moving toward that. But, of course, that's a secondary issue now with all else that's going on in college football.
Oh, that's happening. See, there's a state law that goes into effect July 1st of next year in Florida. So that's happening. The problem is nobody remembers that's happening because – there's all this other crazy stuff going on. I mean, you got to worry about, are they going to play a season first? And that is a big, big question.
Well, and I will say another thing about all this, Andy, as we're in the middle of all these things, I found it really disappointing to hear Mark Emmert, among other people, still arguing against name, image, likeness, essentially. And you know, the idea of still trying to limit it and all this, I mean, why can't we just get to – when we get there, an actual open market?
Here's the deal, Joe. It will be that because they can't stop that. They can make all the rules they want. The rules will get ignored, and it'll be an open market. So, yeah, the thing is, it's been going on for over 100 years. You're going to bring some of the stuff that's been going on in the shadows out to the light. The idea would be to bring it all out of the light. But if they don't want to, that's fine. The bag man still needs something to do.
Andy Staples from The Athletic on the line with it. So, Andy, I have been very skeptical, along with pretty much everybody else, that college football is going to take place this fall. But I did allow myself yesterday, when the SEC released their schedule, to actually get excited. How crazy am I for getting excited about the SEC schedule coming out?
It's been a roller coaster because I feel like this has happened with me every time the schedule has come out. And I keep reminding myself there's a lot of hurdles that they've got to get through before they can put a ball on a tee. And they are trying. They want very badly to play, and I get it. But if you've listened to Greg Sankey all along, he's been very cautious in his wording. He's been very measured, and he said, you know, there's no guarantee that we play. We are going to try to play. We're going to do everything we can. But the idea of going to September 26th for a start date is to give themselves as much time as possible to look at the landscape and see if it's okay. I mean, here's what they want to watch. They want to see, you know, the NFL is a little ahead of the SEC in terms of practices. The NFL is all in pads already. The SEC will get to that point probably toward the end of this week, beginning of next week. Then you've got the ACC will play games on September 12th. The NFL will play games starting September, on that Thursday, so September 10th. And then the NFL will have 2 weekends of games, and the ACC will have 2 weekends of games. The Big 12 will have a weekend or two of games. And so the SEC will get a chance to look at that and say, can we do this or not? They'll have some very decent practical data to tell them if this is a good idea or not. And, you know, that's sort of the maddening thing about the Big Ten's decision and the Pac-12 decision. They could have made the same decision 3 weeks or a month from now, and it would not have changed anything. They'd still be in the same boat. Instead, they gave themselves no chance, and now their fans are up in arms.
Yeah, fans, coaches, players, and of course, they release a schedule, then they cancel everything, and then we hear about the FDA approval for the saliva direct testing, Andy, which to me could be pretty significant in all this. First of all, how significant do you think it is? And do you think there is any chance at all that we could see a reversal from one or both of those two leagues?
I don't think you can reverse it now. I mean, you're going to bring everybody back to campus after you've told them there's no season? Because, yeah, they said everybody could stay on campus. That doesn't mean everybody did. You know, that I would imagine a lot of players kind of scattered to the four winds to at least collect themselves before they return to have class. So, you know, I don't know that from a timing standpoint you can do that now that you've decided to cancel. In terms of the testing, yeah, anything that can make testing cheaper and faster is helpful. And I don't just mean for football or for sports, I mean for society. So, you know, if this company really can scale up and have 14 million tests a month coming out by the end of September, and they're fairly accurate and they're very fast, that's a great thing for everybody, not just for football.
All right, Andy, so let's just say for the sake of this discussion that the SEC is somehow able to get this 10-game schedule played and everything goes relatively well in the fall. How difficult will it be for us at that point to then go back in the future to these 8-game conference schedules and have to deal with like Tennessee versus UMass and all these different matchups that take place every year?
I don't want to go back now. I've seen the grid. I've seen the little helmet schedule they put out, and I don't want to go back. So I don't know how you foist that on a season ticket holder. Yeah, we're playing 700 games. We got Coastal Carolina, and we got Eastern Washington. Come on. I mean, this is so much better. Tennessee and Auburn are a great example. They played every year from 1956 to 1991, and then they played much less frequently when the SEC split into divisions, and hardly at all once it went to 14 teams. They've only played twice since A&M and Missouri joined the league. So are you really even in the same league if you never play each other? You know, Texas A&M comes to Knoxville for the first time as a conference member. This is their ninth season in the SEC. And by the way, they still will not have completed the set. That's when they go to Kentucky in 2025.
Wow.
In their 13th year in the league.
So, Andy, talk me into the idea that Greg Sankey did anything other than, we'll just give Missouri and Kentucky to Alabama with these add-ons. I can't find the formula
sure.
here.
Would you like your champion to win the national championship?
Yeah, I think so.
So why would you give them a harder schedule?
Hey, look, I understand. I understand the thinking. I also understand why everybody's ticked off about it.
But that's not what I would have done, because there's an asterisk on the national champion anyway if they play a season this year. So who cares? Do it for the ratings. You've got a big TV deal coming up in 3 years, but ESPN's supposed to buy the CBS deal out early. So you've got a big TV deal coming up. Let's boost the ratings. Let's add, you know, Florida already plays LSU from the West, and Ole Miss, let's add Auburn and Alabama. Georgia already plays Alabama, let's add LSU and Texas A&M. That's what people want to watch. So do that. And then when they say, you know, when Nick Saban or Kirby Smart complain, say, this is for the good of the league, whether you win the national championship or not this year is irrelevant, because there would have been an asterisk on it anyway. Please enjoy the giant sums of money we'll be sending you to your school in 2 or 3 years.
So, Andy, I want to throw something out to you that could be absolutely insane, but that's what I do. I just kind of throw things out there and see if they stick. What happens if the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, they all play this fall and things go relatively well, and the Big 10 and the Pac 12 are looking around at each other and they say, man, the spring looks nice. We should play. We've got to recoup some of this money. We got to find a way to play. What happens in recruiting at that point if, you know, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12 are all done, and all of a sudden the Big 10 and the Pac 12 just decide to play in the spring?
Well, it's just like anything else in recruiting. You can turn it to your advantage. You know, if you're playing in the spring, and you actually think you're playing in the spring, and you're a Big Ten team, and you're recruiting a freshman, or, you know, recruiting a high school kid against an SEC team, and you think this is a person who could probably play right away, and you think it's maybe a three-year NFL guy, you say, hey, guess what? You can play your freshman year this spring, your sophomore year next fall, and then your junior year in 2022, and then you're out. Want to come play right now? You can essentially reclassify. So that they would use it. Now, you don't use that on everybody. You only use that on somebody you feel like can come in and play right away. But then the SEC, they're going to be hammering away going, well, you saw they canceled football. They don't actually care about football, so why don't you come play where we actually do care about football? So you can always – it's sort of like the eternal thing in recruiting where the bad teams go, well, you could go there, but you'll sit. You come here, you play now. And the good teams go, well, you could go there, but you'll lose. Come here and go to the NFL. So you just try to find what works on those guys.
All right, I feel like we haven't complained about the NCAA enough in this segment, Andy. I'm going to go back to Tennessee.
Can I clue you in on the game here? you know this. You've covered college sports for a long time.
Yes.
Why, who cares what the NCAA does? The Power Five leagues cut the NCAA out years ago of football decision-making. This is exactly what they wanted. There's nothing the NCAA can do because this is how the school set it up to operate. So why – they just want the NCAA there as a patsy, and suckers keep falling for it.
Right. I just – it's the NCAA when they have, say, what I thought was maybe a no-brainer waiver request from Cade Mays, you know, and I understand, you know, the other school, Virginia Tech, had one denied.
Why is it a no-brainer, Joe?
Well, honestly, I think everything should be a no-brainer now.
He was only playing 3 hours from home. It's not like he was across the country.
Right.
But, yes, it is maddening when JT Daniels gets his waiver granted. When JT Daniels is from Southern California, was playing at USC, goes to Georgia, and boom, he's got a waiver. Cade Mays is from Knoxville, goes home to Knoxville, and gets denied.
Yeah, I mean, I just – And there was some stuff with his dad too, and all that. But I mean, I guess to me also, given everything that is happening, I guess I would have been a little lighter on all these right now. I mean,
they're going to change that rule.
Yes, they are.
I don't even know why they're bothering with this stuff. They're already going to change the rule, so just start doing that now.
Exactly. That's what we're. I love it. Just change it now. I'm all for it. Andy Staples from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Andy, thanks so much for joining us as always, man. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks,
absolutely. Just change it. I'm all for it.
Just come on.
That's right. We'll dive into the SEC schedule again when we come back. Also, get Nick Saban's reaction to the schedule that was released. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Kirk will tell you, I've been a proponent of this before the pandemic. I think this is the way it should be. They should play 10 conference games, and they should do it every year, pandemic or not. The ACC should do it. The Big Ten should add another game, and they should do it. And the Pac-12 should, too. I think a 10-game conference schedule and still have one more game against a Power 5 opponent when normal times return. And then the 12th game, you do whatever you want. If you want to have an FCS game or if you want to do two Power 5s or whatever, go for it. But I think that this is the wave of the future. And I hope that this is something that the SEC adopts permanently. I think it's good for the players. They like playing the big games. Certainly good for us in television, not going to deny that. And I think just in terms of playing big game to get fans in the seats once we get back to that, I think that's I think this is the way it should be, and I hope this is a permanent change.
That was ESPN's Reese Davis talking about the change of moving the conference games to 10 games every year. And, Joe, let me tell you, I'll be honest with you. if by some miracle this college football season happens and it works out and everything goes relatively well in the fall, it's going to be hard for me to go back to 8-game conference schedules in the SEC. Like, I'm all for having 12 games and having 2 non-conference games and them being relatively bigger games. But the days of, like, Tennessee versus UMass or, I don't know, Vanderbilt, Austin Peay, like, I'm done with those days. It doesn't get me fired up.
You know who's not for this? Who is screaming right now?
All of those non-Power 5 teams.
Well, all the coaches. All the coaches.
Well, sure.
There's not a coach in the world they're going to say, are you kidding me?
I know.
First of
but
all,
I don't care about their opinion.
Why? Yeah. I'm just saying that, you know, the coaching, first of all, you know, there's the quickness with which coaches get fired, and I'm not complaining for them. They get paid a lot of money to do this job, especially at the Power 5 level. But there's also, they will tell you, the wear and tear on my team, if you make us play this many quote-unquote big games, is going to be impossible to deal with.
You've got like 120 players. Fine.
I understand. I'm telling you what coaches are going to say. And, yes, then you also have all these programs. I don't disagree. As a fan, I mean, this is something that's the filler in college football has gotten out of hand. I mean, there's – look, if you go back and look at someone like Wisconsin's and Minnesota's schedules over years, they would play 4 patsies. They don't even –
oh, yeah.
They wouldn't even play like a competitive team of their 4. They're trying to pad wins to get to a bowl game. And coaches say – it's just like basketball coaches say, you know, I'm judged on making the NCAA tournament or not. You know, a lot of college football coaches, I'm judged on making bowl games or not, which all you have to do is be 6-6 now. Well, let's take Vanderbilt. I mean, look, if Vanderbilt didn't have these weaker non-league games, in almost every year of Vanderbilt history over the last, like, 70, they would win, like, 1 or 2 games.
Yep.
So it's different situations. I will say that my biggest hesitation is not that the coaches are going to complain about it, but it's that these programs rely on this for their funding. I think that there's going to be a movement to this, Robbie. And also, I think this whole thing is going to further the gap between the haves and have-nots in college football. When the dust settles, so to speak, I think you're just going to see a bigger split. Andy Staples was talking about the Power 5 splitting away, and, you know, I think that that's a possibility.
I mean, it's 2 completely different sports, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's not the same sport. Like, you can – there, every now and then you get these cool stories.
Appalachian State,
App State
coming
in there.
Yep.
And, I mean, heck, App State almost beat Tennessee in Tennessee a couple years ago.
It was
so that part of it's cool, and that's great. But most of the time, these games are like 35-0 by the start of the third quarter. At that point, they're really serving no purpose for anyone except, I guess, to get your younger players some playing time. It's just 2 different leagues. It's 2 different sports. So I agree with you and Andy. Like, eventually, the Power 5 is going to be its own thing. And they're just going to play each other. And I'm for that. I think that's going to make for great drama, great football seasons. I'm all for it. I do, however, hear what you're saying in terms of these other programs, your FCS programs, your non-Power 5 programs. They need these games against your Tennessees and your Alabamas to really fund everything else they do in their program.
Like, some of these leagues, excuse me, have gone to, like, you can't – like, the Big Ten went to, you know, you can't play FCS teams. You know,
yeah.
That was – so, and the FCS team's way cheaper. You can schedule an FCS game, usually, I don't know, like $600,000, $700,000. Middle Tennessee going up to Michigan, and I may be off a little bit here, but I think they got like $1.3 million,
yeah,
just to go play at Michigan. So if you're Middle Tennessee listening to this discussion right now and thinking about a future where you don't have Virginia Tech coming to your place, you don't have Duke coming to your place, you don't have like home, you know, like a 3-for-1 or whatever it was, home and home with Vanderbilt.
Right.
That's death for that program. I don't know if it's death, but that's a big, big loss financially. So, like, I'm sensitive to that, and I think there's still a place for that. But I would love uniform 10-game conference schedules in the Power 5 leagues. I think Reese Davis is unrealistic if he's talking about that plus a competitive Power 5 game. If you have 2, I don't think that's happening. I think the other 2 would be, you know, maybe it would be like playing like a middle – and playing an FCS game, and people are still not going to like that after they see nothing but conference games. But I mean, I think there's got to be some kind of a compromise on that. And again, coaches are going to be like, you can't expect me to play all these games.
Now, I will say, Nick Saban said yesterday in his press conference, he loves 10-game conference schedule. He says he's been talking about it for years. Here's what Nick Saban had to say.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, people made a decision based on, you know, player safety, you know, what was best for the league, what we could control player safety with. And, you know, there was a lot of expert people that I have a lot of respect for medically as well as professionally who, you know, made this decision. It's not an easy decision, but it's something that we're, you know, all committed to trying to create a safe environment for the players to be able to play and compete. I think the fact that we're playing 10 SEC games, I mean, I've been a guy that's been wanting to play 10 SEC games for a long time. So this year we get to do that. I think it's good for our players who get the opportunity to create value against 10 really quality opponents, you know, in our league. I think it's going to be very challenging because, you know, it's going to be every week you're going to have a very, very good opponent. But I think it's, you know, good for the fans. Hopefully it'll create a lot of interest. I'm pleased with it. And, you know, I looked at this, you know, schedule and, you know, I think they did it as fairly as possible. And, you know, we go to Missouri to start, play Texas A&M early. We got to play everybody at some point in time, so we just got to take them one game at a time. So, and that's exactly how we've always approached it, and we will approach it right now.
Yeah, I sort of said coaches who don't have all the best players.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
not
coaches
fair.
Who aren't going to kill everybody every week.
Like, why we got to go to Missouri to start the season?
He
that's
thinks
not
it's
fair.
A great, fair schedule. Yeah. Like, Nick Saban loves the schedule.
Come on, we usually play in Atlanta to start off the season. That's going to mess up the whole trajectory of our season. We're not playing in Atlanta. We got to play in Missouri.
You got the one game at a time in there, too. Yeah, Saban has been, and 2 years ago, Saban at SEC Media Days was like, well, let's go to 9 like the Big Ten has done. So I will give Saban credit for that. And Saban has been big on also, again, the fan interest, fans leaving, fans not showing up, more and more people just like, nah, sit at home, especially if you're not playing a good team.
Right.
I'll just sit at home. But coaches who don't have the like the massive talent advantage week after week after week, don't have like 5 stars in their threes, you know, they feel a little differently about it.
When we come back, we will dive back into the Titans. Kyle Tucker from The Athletic, new on the Titans beat, will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad taking you through this Tuesday morning. Diving back into some Titans discussion. Let's bring on our friend Kyle Tucker from The Athletic, new on the Titans beat. Kyle, what's going on, my man?
Not too much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I want to congratulate you first off on being a part of the Titans beat. And as a welcoming gift yesterday, the Titans were kind enough to let you witness Logan Woodside versus Cole McDonald in their first padded practice. So congratulations to you for that.
Yeah, it was, boy, that was a treat. It was some fine quarterbacking across the board.
Absolutely. So what did you make of the Titans in their first padded practice yesterday?
Well, I can't pretend to tell you I made a whole lot of it, having really never covered the team or seen them practice any other day, other than I would, you know, you mentioned the quarterbacks there. I would just say, based on a small sample size, that they really need Ryan Tannehill to be out there healthy and make it through the whole season, because that backup situation feels a little shaky. I know there's been some optimism about Logan, but, you know, he's a guy who hasn't proved it at all on that stage. And those are some bright lights when they come on. And beyond injury and all that other stuff, I mean, with COVID right now, you know, you can't – I don't think you can just say, well, this guy's in great shape. He takes care of his body. You know, we have a good offensive line. He'll probably stay healthy. Something else might take a guy out for a few games. And that makes me wonder, you know, we know they've worked out some quarterbacks or at least one quarterback. Do they need to go add somebody else still? Probably so.
All right, so let me make sure I have the Kyle Tucker bio correct. From Clarksville, correct?
Yes, correct, yes.
Living now in Mount Juliet?
Correct.
And, of course, a lot of Kentucky fans will know Kyle. He's done an awesome job covering the Wildcats for a long time now. A lot of years with Cal. But you were telling
9 years.
9 years with covering Cal. Now, that is all Cal, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, gosh, man, we're all getting old.
He's entering year 12 at Kentucky.
My goodness, it is. But you were telling me yesterday, so you have been at Titans camp before, and you, many, many years ago. How long? How many years ago are we talking here, and who were you covering it for?
So, yeah, I'm from Clarksville, Tennessee. I guess I'll try to give my speedy journalism origin story. I started writing for, like, the high school paper and all that stuff, but I wasn't sure what I was going to do professionally. I started college my freshman year of college. I was at Austin Peay for my first 2 years before I went to Western Kentucky. I was working at the Fazoli's as the breadstick guy.
Oh, one of my heroes. Good stuff.
Yeah. And the sports editor of the local paper in Clarksville, the Leaf Chronicle, which was, I guess still is, a sister paper of the Tennessean. The sports editor came in. I was his breadstick guy. He was like the only person in the dining room. And we struck up a conversation, and I told him I was into journalism and yada, yada, yada. They said they needed somebody to take high school calls and type up the little reports on all the high school games and stuff. And I was like, sure, I'd rather do that than sling breadsticks. And I kind of worked my way up there just as a part-timer at the paper as a college kid, and they started letting me cover various things. And that was the year, or it may have been the next year, that the Titans came to Nashville. They were trying to blow that out, all the coverage. They sent everybody they had up there, and they let me tag along and write little sidebars on Titans games. I wrote a story on Javon Kearse and a bunch of different stuff. But yeah, that was the first year they were in Nashville. My dad brought me over a box of old stuff from the basement last week, and in it was all, I'll have to tweet out a picture of it, all the little paper credentials from all those Titans home games that year.
Wow. Titans OG, really.
Further proof that really all good things stem from breadsticks. I mean, that's awesome.
Yes, and Fazoli's breadsticks in particular. I think, yes. I still remember the dietary values on those, like 49 fat grams in one.
Oh, yeah.
Fazoli's breadstick. We had a bucket of the garlic butter that was like paint, and used a paintbrush to paint it on these big trays of breadsticks. Delicious, but it is really, truly disgusting.
God bless you. God bless you. All right, so Kyle Tucker from The Athletic on the line with us. What did you make of Kentucky's football schedule that came out yesterday and the announcement of the SEC schedule as a whole?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a lot of what we said when they announced the two additional games, that they sort of spared the big boys and just absolutely dropped the sledgehammer on the little guy. You know, Arkansas trying to rebuild has just an absolutely brutal schedule. You know, Missouri got crushed. I mean, you know, it's hard to. Yeah, they got Vanderbilt in week four. Other than that, their first 7 weeks are a nightmare. They open against Alabama. They have road games at Tennessee and LSU. Then the Vandy game, and then they have Florida on the road, Kentucky, and Georgia in their first 7 games. I mean, that might be the hardest first 7 weeks of a college football season any team has ever seen.
Welcome, Eli.
Yeah, exactly. Breaking in a new coach, and that's what he gets, you know. And you know, Arkansas, not much easier. Then, you know, Alabama and LSU kind of got spared. But I think the one interesting thing is that Georgia's got, actually, when you start looking at Georgia's schedule, they open against Arkansas, which is obviously kind of a gimme for Georgia. But the next 5 games, Georgia has Auburn, Tennessee, at Alabama, at Kentucky, and Florida. You know, if Georgia's going to make the playoff, if they're, you know, in this mythical world where they get to a playoff without shutting the season down, you know, that's a brutal 5-game stretch on the front end of the schedule. Those are a few things that stood out to me. Kentucky, you know, the other thing about that I saw is all things considered, Kentucky's actually got a chance to, you know, be 5-2 or 6-1 heading to Alabama on November 21st. They open at Auburn. That's a huge one. It's probably the best game of the first week. That's kind of a dud of a first week for the whole SEC, but Kentucky at Auburn's a sneaky, intriguing game. And this is probably the deepest and most talented team that Stoops has had there at Kentucky. Across the board, got elite offensive lines and defensive lines, which they've just really never had at Kentucky. And so that, you know, Kentucky could be a really sneaky option in the East because of the way Georgia's schedule is such a gauntlet early. I think, you know, because of the way this, the weeks are set up, the schedule itself, the order of the games, I kind of actually think Florida is your favorite in the East more than Georgia a little bit. But I wouldn't be surprised to see a Kentucky or a Tennessee have a chance to make some noise there, at least be in it late in the season because of the way some of the games break.
See, one thing writing about the NFL, Kyle, is you won't have to deal with stupid terms like committable offer, you know, for example.
That's right.
Which brings me to my question about Kennedy Chandler, the nation's number one point guard. He just picked Tennessee. Now, it was said over Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, Memphis. Of course, I immediately heard from Memphis fans like, yeah, I mean, we didn't really want him. So my question for you is, how badly did Kentucky want this kid? I will say I went down the rabbit hole of Kennedy Chandler highlights after he committed, and my goodness, he is special player.
Yeah, he's the number one. I mean, he's the number one point guard in the country. Any fan base telling you that their team didn't really want him is ridiculous. Of course, they really wanted him. I know Kentucky wanted him. I do think the writing has kind of been on the wall. A lot of times, what happens here is like, well, we cooled in recruiting him a lot. Well, that happens a lot when you know the writing's on the wall.
Right.
You know, these staffs are plugged into the situation for the most part. Sometimes there are huge surprises. You know, I remember when Zion Williamson picked Duke after Cam Reddish and R.J. Barrett had already picked Duke, and it was like, he's going there with those guys?
Right.
But there are not a lot of those with the high-end guys. Usually, you know, the closer you get to a guy making a decision, everybody's kind of figured out what's going on. And when that happens, a lot of times the staff will distance itself. Well, they're not going to waste their time recruiting somebody. Does that mean they didn't want him? No, it does not. It means they're smart enough not to waste their time. But, yeah, the kid's really good. I think an interesting piece of it is the idea that he could lure Paolo Banchero, the number one power forward in the class, to come with him, a top five player, I think is unbelievable. I really, really like Paolo Banchero. Kentucky loves him. And if you want to ask about how much does Kentucky want a guy, you know, Calipari has flown across the country multiple times to Seattle to visit and try to lure him. You know, Tennessee's been in on him for a long time. I think the conventional wisdom is Paolo Banchero stays home and goes to Washington, but the tide is turning on that a little bit. I know Kennedy Chandler has talked about wanting to pair up with him and get him to come with him to Knoxville. Jerry Meyer at 247, national analyst, has switched his pick to Tennessee for Paolo Banchero. It gets real interesting with Tennessee and Rick Barnes if he gets a 1-2 punch like Chandler and Banchero. And because of the nature of the way so many basketball players want to form these super teams, you know, does that mean more are coming? Barnes got Tennessee to the number one spot, the number one ranking, and a team that was absolutely good enough to go to the Final Four a couple years ago with a bunch of three-star dudes that he coached up. And what does he do if he's got the most talented team in the country? I know his detractors will say, get out of the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it. He's a great coach. And if he starts getting great, great players, I think they're pretty nasty.
Yeah, I mean, you can point to some Texas rosters that were pretty loaded that you know, didn't go as far as hope. But to your point, I think he's done an incredible job here. And I feel like in this season of 2021, which darn well better be bubbled up in some way so we can have an NCAA tournament, I've got Tennessee as the best team in the SEC by a nose over Kentucky. You agree with that?
Yeah, I had them as I did a too early ranking of the SEC teams. It's been a while now, but not a whole lot has changed other than there was some kind of big news yesterday that I think we should all keep an eye on, which was Isaiah Joe reversed course, and decided to go into the NBA draft. You know, at Kentucky, I think there's some, you know, there's concern there. And other places in the league, do elite guys who can't go into the draft because they're freshmen, do they choose one of these G League select deals? You know, that some of the they're offering some of these top high school players for $200,000-$400,000. If you worry that you're not going to get to play college basketball at all, do you just pull the plug? And so that's something to keep an eye on. But, yeah, based on how things stand right now, I'd put Tennessee one. And Kentucky's the most talented team in the SEC. They have a ridiculous amount of talent, and a lot of what the projections on them will hinge on will be whether Olivier Saar, the Wake Forest transfer, gets a waiver to play. But they had the number one class. They have the top transfer in the country in Saar, an all-ACC seven-footer. There's just a crazy, even by Kentucky standards, a crazy amount of turnover. They have one guy back who played any minutes last season, and he averaged 4 points a game. So there's just so much turnover, and there's going to be so much less acclimation time probably for a Kentucky this year. You know, they take the full season to get those freshmen ready to make a run in March. There's going to be a lot less of the season, I would guess, this year. And so for all those reasons, continuity at Tennessee, I think the Vols are absolutely the favorite.
Kyle Tucker from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Kyle, thanks so much for joining us, and welcome back to Nashville.
Thank you.
Absolutely. When we come back, how will the Titans' leadership be affected this year by some of the losses they had in the offseason? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nashville SC is back in action this Saturday, taking on Atlanta United at 6 p.m. The game will be broadcasted on ESPN 94.9, starting with pregame coverage at 5:45. Welcome back in Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. Thanks to Kyle Tucker for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, you and Kyle are going to be tag teaming some Titans coverage this year, so that's exciting.
Yeah, Kyle will still keep covering, of course, the Wildcats. He does an awesome job with that, and SEC hoops at large and football. You know, like he said, Kentucky football is kind of, you know, it's an underplayed story in this league as the job Stoops has done there. But yes, Kyle will be doing some Titans, and it's pretty cool to think back. That's, you know, late 90s. Covering some Titans, early Titans when they got here.
The breadstick story may be the greatest story I've ever heard.
That's a good story. It brought me back to working at Gumby's Pizza.
Okay.
In college at Michigan, in East Lansing. Gumby's Pizza. And we had these things called pokey sticks. Okay, it's like Gumby and pokey,
okay,
right? You get it?
Okay, yes.
I mean, just the most unhealthy, but I would make them, and I'd sprinkle bacon on them.
Oh,
and
man.
Then we had these ranch cups with the most ridiculous, I mean, the pokey sticks, man. The late night. Anyone who's ever had some late night East Lansing, you know, nights in the 90s or 80s knows pokey sticks. But yeah, brought me back to that. I mean, like, delivering pizza is a pretty good job, man.
I've done it. Yeah, like I did it one summer with my air conditioning out.
Oh,
that was fun.
Okay, yeah.
And it was like the one summer around here where it got up to like literally 105 degrees in June for like a 4-day stretch.
That's
no
tough.
AC, so I would show up and just completely soaked. Like, hey, here's your pizza. Enjoy your pizza. Please give me a tip.
Did you deliver at a place that had like late night deliveries?
Oh yeah,
like weekends, because that's where it gets things can get just. I mean, I have some interesting experiences.
Yeah, get a little rowdy.
Yeah, and people like, you know, they barely can pay for the pizza. They try to tip you beer, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Those late night deliveries can get a little dicey.
Yes, they can. What's like the weirdest job you've ever had? Mine, I mean, I was a groundskeeper, which sounds interesting, but you got to do a lot of weird things. I saw some things.
Did you?
Oh, man.
I mean, my first job was seventh grade as a bagger at the commissary on King Abdulaziz Air Base in Dahran, Saudi Arabia. So that's
it's hard to top that.
No pay, all tips.
Oh.
But I made like $7 an hour, pure tips.
Back then. It's pretty good.
Which is pretty good in the 80s. Yes, it is. So, yeah, probably I don't have anything like all that unique, you know, dorm hot trucker in the cafeteria.
There you go.
Pizza delivery, telemarketer.
Oh, really?
American Cancer Society telemarketer.
Okay.
So, you know, for a good cause.
Sure.
You know, so like there's people a lot more
so you're not
receptive.
The telemarketer that people yell at.
Right. People a lot more receptive to that, and you're calling people who have donated before, but still. If you've been on the other side of a telemarketer, because we all have been on the side of, oh, please leave me alone.
Yes.
Stop bothering me. If you've been on this side of it, you got a little bit more compassion for those
right.
people, because it's not easy.
No.
It's not like people enjoy cold calling people and getting hung up on and all that stuff. So I have a little bit more patience for those people.
Munson, what's the weirdest job you've ever had?
I never really worked weird jobs. I mean, I worked at a place that made, like, yogurt and salad wrap in the mall. I hated that job because, like, people were just – I hate working food. I've always hated working.
So you
food.
Made it? You well, made
I,
the?
Oh, I quit after like 2 weeks because I was like, I'm not making salad wraps for these these weirdos anymore. I'm going to leave. But it was cool working in the mall, though, because, like, you know, I was young. I think I just turned 21. So I was in California at the time, just turned 21 years old. I'm okay. Like, let's go. Like, you know, but I just don't like making these wraps. And then I worked in the mall at another job working at, like, the Levi's store, which was cool because, once again, working in the mall, you get to walk around on your break and, you know, check out the sights, which is a lot of stores. So, I mean, outside of that, I really haven't. Like, I pushed carts when I was a teenager at Target and Walmart both. Okay. So, yeah, I did that. Like, I worked at Lowe's at one point.
Yeah. I just remember this.
Moving mulch.
I sold bathtubs for one day. I had to drive from here to Cookville in, like, the Sam's Club and try to sell people some bathtubs.
Wow. That's an interesting job. So you sold quit one. Or got fired after one day?
I stopped doing that. I was like, I'm not driving to Cookville to sell bathtubs.
People weren't receptive to your bathtub.
Got one.
My friend.
You sold one?
I got one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, one day, one sale. That's solid.
My friend in high school tried to get me to do that vacuum cleaning, like that vacuum hustle, like selling those vacuum cleaners.
Yeah.
Like, this was back in high school, and I was like, dude, I'm working at Target. I can get discounts on video games and albums. Like,
I've got made here, man.
I'm good. I don't want to sell your vacuums. Like, you get paid off commission, like going door to door selling vacuums. I'm like, no thanks, man. I'll pass on
I did the perfume thing.
Did you?
The pyramid scheme. You know, bought a bunch of perfume to sell and then basically end up, like, eating it.
The it's vacuum
not literally eating it, but, you
incredible
know,
amount
it.
Of perfume.
But see, everybody
house.
Needs yeah. perfume, though. Like, not everybody wants vacuums. So it's like, that's a hard hustle, man, because it's like, hey, do you even have carpet?
Does everybody want perfume?
No.
I mean, yeah.
I mean,
a lot of people work perfume.
I think there was some cologne, too. It was like fake Dracar Noir
okay.
cologne, you know? The Polo.
But see, I mean, I've never really worked like weird jobs. I've just worked normal people.
This
jobs.
One,
like
normal. This one counts.
Yeah,
if you got to deal with us.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to deal with you guys. That's
looking
about
through
it.
The glass at us right now. It's
well,
like being
I mean,
at the zoo.
Most of the time, it was just like I pushed buggies for like half of my life through college, and then I worked at Sears, which Sears was like, this is like Sears is like downcline.
Yeah,
I worked a lot of places. Best Buy, like. I just quit most of them because I'm like, I'd rather focus on school or do something else. But, I mean, I liked my job at Sears because I was like, I literally did nothing but, like, sit in the back and then just watch, like, sports on my phone. That was it. And then do homework. I would do homework at school, at work.
That's a good job. That's good work if you can get it.
Yeah, it was slow. And, you know, nobody goes to Sears. Does anybody even still go to Sears?
I don't know. I mean, Sears, as a kid, you go through the Sears catalog to pick out your Christmas gifts. That's how old I am. The Sears and the JCPenney catalogs.
Do your kids have any idea what catalogs are?
Not a clue.
Just none whatsoever.
We got the phone book the other day.
Really?
It's like a pamphlet.
They still
now.
Hand those out?
No. I mean, it's seriously like a pamphlet. It's like 12 pages.
It used to be. You
yeah,
could do
I mean,
some
it used
damage
to be you couldn't
with that
even,
thing, man.
Oh, by the way, that's another job I had. I delivered phone books one summer. I forgot about that one.
Okay. That's
and that's when
that's
they were big.
One. Yeah, you
and they
really
were big and heavy then.
Those things. The phone book. Hey, kids today, they just don't know how it used to be. I saw, so like, there's a video out there of these kids looking at a rotary phone and trying to operate it. Just nothing. They couldn't do it.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Even the idea of a landline. Do you guys have a landline?
Oh, I
had
a landline.
Yeah,
you
landline.
Do have a landline. You both have a landline?
Well, I don't have one now. I don't.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I'm saying
yeah,
did. Now.
Yeah. No.
Oh,
no.
Yeah. I mean, we did when the kids were little, but I bet you they don't even remember it, you know?
No.
They all just have their screens that just suck them in all day long if we let it happen.
Yeah. And now even with school at home, like, how's that going?
Yeah, the Wi-Fi gets a little – I mean, I get texts a lot. And my wife's like, oh, Wi-Fi's acting up again. So we've got them on three different spots. And they're, you know, they're trying. And we can kind of keep an eye on them, which is good. But then, like, my oldest, I went in the other day, and he's in class with his headphones in, and he's drifting off. I guess you could do that in real class, too. We couldn't see it. Like, hey, Jack, wake up, man. Hey, you're in class right now. Leave me alone. You know.
He's leaving the school experience exactly how it should be.
Yeah.
I drifted off in class all the time.
That's true. I mean, how many times did you wake up in high school and like a puddle of drool on your desk?
That's what happens when you send these kids to school at 7:30 in the morning. It's too early.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, they get more time to sleep, so you'd think that, you know, I mean, you have to wake up and like get ready to go to school and get driven or take the bus. Wake right up and get into class. That should count for something. No, it's not great, man. It's not great.
Johnny tweets in, says, I was born in 1982. I remember what it was like to go through the Sears catalog giving mom and dad ideas for me for Christmas.
Yes.
Simple
yes,
time,
Johnny.
Man.
Oh, absolutely, man. I mean, I remember going through there. And actually, parachute pants. I ordered some parachute pants, I promise you, from the Sears catalog. Also, like, you know, like Star Wars toys or whatever. I mean, yeah, you just circle it, you know.
Parachute pants and breakdancing. I would have paid a lot of money to see Rex Road in his teenage years.
I would pay a lot of money to never talk about it, to
pretend it never happened. Sorry, buddy, it happened.
Well, I drove that segment completely off the rails, but we'll get back into the Titans to start the night.
What was that supposed to be? What were we supposed to talk about?
Leadership. We'll talk about that coming up next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No